This episode is sponsored by Under Armour and their Infinite Elite Everyday Running Shoe, which I was lucky enough to head out to Barcelona and see being unveiled at its launch, and to chat to athletes like Sharon Nakidi, who won the New York Marathon a few years ago, who does all of her easy and steady runs in this pair of shoes. And then we've set Jess from the Running Channel a very specific challenge to train for 12 weeks for her fastest, hopefully ever, 10K, which is also back out in Barcelona.
Yeah, she is loving training in this shoe. And I think it's important as well, because we're so lucky we get to test lots of different shoes, but we do know that some people just want that one pair that will do everything. So Jess has been doing her long runs, interval sessions, and she will be tackling the final 10K in the Under Armour Infinite Elite shoes.
Yeah, big focus on endurance and a brand new foam, which provides extra energy return and looks after you on even your longest runs. So if you want to know more, head to the link in the show notes.
This is the Running Channel podcast with me, Sarah Hartley, Rick Kelsey, who's just come back from Tenerife and still doesn't look very tanned, and Andy Baddeley, who ran really fast the other day.
Thanks.
And is probably going to moan about it for the whole of this episode. Yeah.
I did run fast. I ran faster than I've run in years and years. That's what we're going to talk about, running this 1K time trial. But I ran it in a clean set of clothes. I hadn't worn them five times on a train in a tropical destination, unlike Sarah Hartley.
I don't know what you're talking about. Let's dive in.
All right, sweaty Betty.
Oh dear. So for context, basically, Rick was talking about how he doesn't wash his clothes a lot. And I said to the guys, guess how many times I managed to wear a sports bra whilst I was out in Jamaica.
One, two, three,
I think
four.
I did five activities, but it was across 4 days. So like every morning it had dried out. And I was like, I really like the colour of this. Let's go again.
I mean, I love the way she just dropped in Jamaica there, by the way.
Just casual trip out to Jamaica.
I was on holiday and I just saw a picture of you, because I don't tend to, you know, do too much social media on holiday. But the one thing I did see is you on a beach with the same bolt. What on earth?
Yeah.
Just how you roll now, isn't it?
Just how I roll.
Yeah. I mean, what?
It was incredible.
Explain.
So I went out on a trip to Jamaica with Puma, and obviously Usain Bolt is a Puma athlete. And so they got him out. The first day they were like...
They got him out?
What,
they
got
him out. Just rolled him out.
They just rolled him out.
On a speedboat, wasn't it?
Is he always in kind of really short shorts on a beach in Jamaica?
Yeah, that's just where you'll find him. My favourite thing was, so basically we arrived, for the first day they were like, everyone's going to be really jet lagged. Like there were people, I thought our travel was bad because we were going from London to Jamaica. And then when we arrived, I was chatting to the other people whilst we were waiting in the airport. And I was like, oh gosh, that plane journey was long. How long did it take you? And it was this guy from South Africa. And I was like, okay, you win.
You win.
you win. He had to fly That's somewhere well. Else, I assume, in order to then
yeah,
to
yeah he went like Middle three, East somewhere. Yeah, I don't know where he went through, but it was like, I think it was either London, two or three Madrid. Different flights
yeah.
to then get, he ended up in London because then I think he was on the same flight as us. But the incredible thing was he hadn't seen his bag since he'd got on the plane in South Africa. And then we were waiting for him because he was waiting for his bags. And we were all like, They're not coming. But they did. That's they arrived.
Three
you not only met Usain Bolt, you did a track workout on the famous blue track that, like, if anyone's seen any documentaries with Usain Bolt in.
Which is absolutely incredible. Sadly, he
wasn't there.
Mountains
in the background,
that.
Right?
Yeah, beautiful. Like, we turned up, we had to start it at about 6 a.m. just because of how hot it gets. Yeah. And it was like mountains in the background, and we could kind of gradually see the sun coming up behind the mountains. And then, bam, as soon as it appeared, we were like, can we go home now? It's too hot.
I saw you doing, was it 100 meters all out, or was it less?
It was less. It was about 100 meters, yeah.
Yeah. Well, you don't know what any of the lines mean on the track, do
no
you?
No
so
idea.
They could have had you doing anything.
Yeah, I was very confused. I think that one was just about 100 meters, but I'm not sure. The thing that I have never had as bad DOMS, delayed onset muscle soreness, as I had from that track session, because they got us basically, you rotated.
Because you
between,
did it with the same bolt.
No, I did it with Johan Blake, Hansel Parchment and Sharika Jackson.
What?
Very cool.
Yeah.
Very, very cool.
These are the circles of Sarah.
Weirder.
And the coat. And
how long did you go
coach.
For?
We were there for 3 full days.
God, that's jam-packed.
Yeah, it was just so jam-packed. But they got us doing, it was this one exercise where you're kneeling with your like feet flat on the floor. So kneeling like you're making a right angle. And then you had to jump up from kneeling to standing on your feet.
Oh gosh.
And it was...
I don't think I could do that.
No, I couldn't. They had to... The coach had to hold my hands just so that I could get up. But that killed off my quads. So try at home, but with someone to help you do
it. I mean, you've been in Jamaica. Rick's been in Tenerife. I've been in Bedfordshire.
Nice.
Lovely.
You're
How
going away though. You are going away next week, so you will get your holiday.
Yes, to the wonderful, beautiful, incredible New Forest. It is my happy place.
Nice. And is it supposed to rain?
I haven't even looked. I don't care.
Oh.
Just getting away.
Yeah, getting away. I'll not be at home. I'm with my family and Andy Hobdell, who coached me throughout my whole career, with his family as well. So
regular holiday partner. Carnage. Love that. Your head looks better, by the way.
Oh,
just in general, not your scar.
Oh, yes. I have got this lovely this scar here. Has been gradually healing.
It has healed quite well. You've been taking your vitamins.
Always. Yeah. Always.
Should we talk about running?
Yeah.
Hang on. No, I've got chip in here.
Oh, my gosh. Okay. He's segueing.
Listen, I didn't meet Usain Bolt when I was on holiday. Yeah. I did meet some nice people called Tom and Jess from West London.
All right. Listeners. Oh, really?
Yeah, in Lanzarote.
Tom and Jess.
No, Tenerife. You two won't believe this. I think I jinxed it. I said on this podcast 2 months ago, and you two ripped it out of me, that for 20 years, since I was a teenager...
I've never got a cold. Have you got a cold?
I got a cold in Tenerife.
Ha! Oh, Sarah! Oh, I don't know if this comes across on camera to anyone watching this, or through the audio to people listening. Sarah could not be happier. She's so happy that you got ill.
I got a cold. We all got a cold.
Was it bad?
Yeah, it was really bad.
Oh,
it was really bad.
So
is this the people that you met? Is that their fault?
I don't know if Tom and Jess gave it to me. No, I don't think so.
What were you doing with Tom and Jess?
Well, you know, the hotel I stayed in, it had a nudist. had a nudist balcony for adults. So you could drop your kids off and go to a nudist.
Well, so were you there the whole time?
Not with Tom and Jess.
That's a weird Running Channel podcast episode, isn't it? Is like you in some kind of nudist environment. I mean, it's weird enough that you want to do an episode from your hot tub.
Sorry, we're not doing an episode.
We're not doing
this.
I was just saying the hotel had that.
Yeah, okay, right.
You know, I thought
Andy,
it a bit.
If you want to go there, that was fine. But
I didn't bring dark enough sunglasses to go.
Wow. Do you want to know the best thing about that? Since the episode where you said you haven't had a cold for 18 years, I haven't had a cold, which through British winter, what? I feel like is
for
a
two
win.
Months. For two yeah, months, you've not had a cold.
You don't understand because you haven't had a cold in 18 years.
It was awful.
For most people, it's like a once a month thing that you get a little sniffle. Yes.
I think all of my children have got a cold at the moment.
Yeah.
All right. Well,
there's a reason they call it the common cold.
Okay. I think mine developed into the flu. It was that bad.
That's why Rick doesn't get it.
You are the epitome.
It's too common for him. he rises above the common cold.
Yeah, that's it.
He considers himself royalty and has absolutely no intention of ever lowering himself to have the common cold. That's why right now he's like, no, it's the flu.
I'm pretty sure it was the flu. So obviously the Canary Islands is famous for amazing running. You know, you got Mount Tide in Tenerife. James just ran around the big hill in Lanzarote or Gran Canaria somewhere.
Gran Canaria,
big hill. If you have...
They're volcanic islands, right?
Yeah, volcanic. Yeah, exactly. I didn't do any running.
Not at all. Not at all.
I had the flu. I didn't do any running.
I did look at your Strava and thought it was looking a little bit barren.
Yeah, yeah. Bit like the islands.
Whereas my Strava has been...
Unlike his wine fridge.
Well, his wine fridge is probably barren because he can't top it up quick enough.
I didn't drink the first 2 days on holiday.
Because you were ill?
Because I was ill.
Yeah. Oh. Yeah. Wait, how long were you away in total?
7 days.
We were kind of desperate to get back in the end. 4 days of family fun.
You were desperate to get back in case we replaced you on the podcast. That's your biggest fear in life.
Well, we're here today, aren't we?
So you hardly ran at all. I have been building up my running since this 1K time trial. I feel like one of us needs to do the expert segue here, and I'm doing my best.
Very good.
I was very sore. You said about speed work, Sarah, from the Usain Bolt track workout, or the Jamaican athlete track workout.
Yeah.
I said to you guys, and you couldn't quite believe it, I was probably more tired after doing this 1K all-out time trial than I was after my marathon.
You know why? I think that is because... So the video is now out. If you want to go over to the Running Channel YouTube channel, it is out. It is called I Ran a 1 Kilometer Time Trial. Not me personally, Andy did. And it is such a good video. And I know why you're tired, because the video itself, you might be thinking, guys, how have you made a video out of Andy running for less than 3 minutes? Well, he didn't half go on about how nervous he was before. And that was enough to make it a full 10 minutes.
Yeah.
I think that would have used up a lot of energy.
I did, the emotional energy of it. Going back into that environment. So since then, I've been just recovery running basically, and not done any workouts, but now I'm getting back in the swing of things, going to the New Forest where it's where I had two Olympic kind of training camps with my training group. So I'm really excited to do some running there. What's quite cool as well is Andy's son, oldest son, Ollie, is now 18. But when I did my Olympic holding camps, he was a really little kid and would come and like hand me water bottles and stuff after track sessions and things like that.
Aww.
But now he wants to go for runs with me and he's possibly fitter than I am. So it's gone full circle, which
but
is
hang on,
cool.
Pretty fit though. At the moment, because you've obviously just nailed this out in some decent times that aren't as fast as an ice skater.
Yes. We did get to the bottom of Sarah's confusion, though. So regular listeners to the podcast will remember that Sarah and everyone was predicting my 1K time. Mm-hmm. And Sarah was like, well, surely someone's done it in under 2 minutes. And the confusion came because...
Oh, yeah, you worked out, yeah.
The entries for the 1K that I was in required you to be able to run a certain 800 meter time, and they were under 2 minutes, which I'm not sure I can do, to be fair. So I had... This is why I was nervous. I'd kind of backdoored my way in to this event.
This is just how Andy rolls. He just goes in, says, do you know who I am? And then just signs up to race.
Absolutely not true. I get volunteered and invited and all that sort of stuff. But I was, because this was my old racing environment. Mm-hmm. Going there, it was the top end of club athletics. It was a big podium festival in Leicester around this kind of 1 kilometer lap. And there were 5K races going on all day. And then there was a break in those 5Ks for there to be this 1K time trial in a cycling kind of Tour de France time trial format. So you went off individually.
Which
every
I think
minute.
is more daunting because it was you had that kind of, you had to be there beforehand. It's not like a kind of the start of a bigger race where you've got other people to talk to or not talk to, or like you can see other people in the same state as you. Whereas because it was one by one, it was kind of, you had to be there a few minutes before, then you saw people go off and then suddenly it was just you on your own waiting, being counted down from 10 as well.
Yeah.
Just on your own. Like, how did that feel?
It's also not natural for Andy probably because he's used to racing. With others.
Yeah. Had you ever done a kind of race similar to that?
No, I've never done a time trial like that. We would have time trialed in training before, but I'd often have had pacemakers or teammates that I'd been running with. So it's very rare to do a solo time trial. And the one thing that's deserted me since retiring is I prided myself on pace judgment. Whereas now, bear in mind, I was trying to run as far under 3 minutes as I could for a K.
Yeah.
Anything faster than about 3:30 per kilometer feels just flat out, really. I mean, that's obviously not quite true, but it's very hard for me to gauge the difference between 3 minutes, 3:10, 3:20 kilometer. Yeah. So that's what I was worried about. And then I didn't have anyone else to play off. I wasn't like, it's no tactics. It's just go as hard as you can, not overcook it, which sounds crazy. You're only running for 3 minutes. How could you possibly be worried about not finishing? But it's not the kind of not finishing from a marathon. It's like, you know, I might have had to literally wobble my way around with the lactate that just accumulates in your legs. If you go so hard in the first minute, I had wobbly legs after about 45 seconds.
Really?
Like, feel the lactate,
When you kind of started and went off of the line, how do you gauge between, I'm not going to be able to finish this, and I reckon I can hold this for 3 minutes? What's going through your head?
Well, the hard thing is, one, I was nervous, but I do need to be nervous, and we talk about this in the video. And that's the point of the video, isn't it? It's to try and give that insight into the whole build-up and me going back into that what environment that was terrifying for me. I feel like I'm now a bit more au fait with the mass participation world through the marathon and so on. But going back to that top end, and also throughout the few hours in the lead up, just constantly bumping into people, some of whom listen to the Running Channel podcast. So, and some of them had kids with them who'd just done junior races earlier in the day, and then they were asking for advice and stuff. And that was amazing. But then also I was seeing other people that from that world I knew in a former life.
Well, yes, you were billed rather highly, weren't you?
I was billed as one of the favourites, which couldn't have been the biggest oversell of my entire career.
I like it. Oversell, underdeliver.
Hang on. but then even the commentators, so the start line commentators were two guys, Jake Whiteman's dad, Jeff Whiteman.
Oh, yeah.
Who I've known throughout my career and has always been involved in coaching and so on. And then James Thee, who I actually used to race against. We ran the Commonwealth Games together and stuff. So they knew me really well. Hannah England, also one of my teammates on World Championships and Olympic teams, she was in the commentary box for the live stream. And so these are all people that I know but I knew from when I felt like I belonged in that space.
And so her going back to it. She was so good.
She was actually laying into me.
So good.
She was like, this guy somehow race walked his way to a 349 mile.
Because I don't lift my knees up. It was just like the little things at the start.
Yeah.
Wasn't there, there was also some reference to like hovering as well.
Oh, she's dead nice. She's dead funny, Hannah, actually. Yeah. I remember meeting her at the running show.
Yeah, you probably probably panicked that she was Hannah from Australia.
Oh yeah, another Hannah.
Where you from? Where you from? Where you from?
Just give me your accent. Yeah, fine.
But to your actual question, because of that whole build-up, I'm so nervous, but then when I get on the start line, I'm like, the calm kind of descends because you can't do anything. I'm often nervous about, are there little things that I need to be doing in my preparation, whether that's mentally or physically? But once you're on the start line, all that goes out of the window and you've got to trust yourself.
Yeah, like you warming up, far more nervous than you like... when you were taking your jogging bottoms and like top off.
Yeah, because then I was like, right, I'm done that bit now. I've got that out of the way. The waiting's over. Let's go. That's in my...
That's really interesting, Sarah. Yeah. Because I think we should do an episode on nerves, you know, on race nerves and how to combat them. Because you wouldn't have thought Andy, with all his professional experience, hundreds of times on a start line, would still get nervous, even now, a couple of years after retiring, going back to competitive form of racing, that you wouldn't have thought that he would be... nervous. What were you nervous about?
I was nervous about making a fool of myself in that environment.
Because you've been billed so highly?
Just because that used to be where I thrived and like people, I don't think people really cared. It's all in my head. But I think, you know, I was a 349 miler. I was one of the fastest guys in the world. I went to the Olympics. And then I go back and I'm very much not any of those things anymore. But I had trained properly for it. I tried to do my best to make sure I wasn't going to do it. And that's probably... what I would say about the nerves is I run better when I'm nervous. So the Olympics, the British trials, the championships, there wasn't a massive difference in how nervous I was. Sometimes I was too nervous. Like there's an inverted U theory. So everything gets better to a point and then you're too nervous and then it drops off. But also if I wasn't nervous enough sometimes, like after a championship, I might try and race again and I'd be a bit flat because I didn't really care. Then I couldn't raise my performance. So it's trying to find that optimum level of nerves. And I just, the first few hundred meters of this, trying to pace it, I just felt such a huge surge of adrenaline. The sort of thing that you don't want in a marathon.
Yeah, you don't want to come off the start line.
That you knew was going to run out after a couple of hundred meters.
Yeah, but
I thought that might carry me through, and it did actually. So I started to feel that real accumulation of lactate and that fatigue after only about a minute. And then I knew at that point I had nearly 2 minutes still to go. And it's just a case about then focusing on all the muscle memory from a previous life and the ability to kind of maintain that performance at and probably slightly beyond my absolute max, my red line, like trying to just toe the line the right way so I don't end up wobbling my way around, collapsing on the side of the track before I even get to the finish line.
It's interesting you talk about red line because I feel like that is the difference between a lot of kind of top end athletes and then maybe people like average runners like myself that are trying to get there. Like I think I've been in more racing situations where I perhaps haven't gone as far as I maybe could go because nerves are affecting me the other way. Like I am so paranoid of what you're saying of like getting the wobbly legs or like that happening that actually I'm being too conservative rather than going so hard that I might tip over the other way.
Yeah, that was the thing I was most proud of. I don't think I left any time out there. Right. I didn't finish and go, oh, if I just pushed around that bend or this bit a little bit quicker. I was going my absolute max and I did get it almost right for my current level of fitness. Like I ran faster, way faster than I thought I could run.
Are we revealing your final time on here or are we making people go and watch the video?
I think we can reveal it. I mean, it's on the results, I suppose.
True, it was.
2:39.
Which is exactly what I guessed in the sweepstake. Oh, not to take your glory.
The internal sweepstake, you're not eligible for the competition.
Oh, yeah,
mine at 4:10 was a bit out.
Yeah, you had no faith in me. I did speak to someone beforehand. This is in the video actually, where they came up to me and they're like, so what, they wanted to enter the competition to win life as a sponsored athlete.
Yeah.
And I was... they said, oh, what do you think you run? I was like, well, if borderline, like right around 250, like then anything around there. And they just looked at me, shook their head, and they were like, I'm going 253.
Really?
I was just like, took a look at you, what, and just thought you weren't, you know,
like, this, no way this guy's doing it. So, but I,
Does stuff like that though, I feel like you're the type of person where stuff like that makes you go like, I'll show you.
100%.
Yeah, yeah. I feel like that's
were you in your East End beanie hat when you spoke to this guy?
No, I wasn't. I was
you know, the one that keeps the ears out.
Head to toe.
Completely doesn't do anything.
My teeny weeny beanie.
My teeny weeny
beanie. Yeah, but he hasn't got any hairs on the top of his head.
Oh yeah, but you're supposed to keep your ears warm, aren't you?
Well, sometimes that's too much heat. So like, you know.
He's only got teeny weeny ears.
I like my teeny weeny beanie. I like trying to pretend to be younger than I am and in touch with the youth culture in London, which I'm none of those things, but you know, it makes me feel young at heart. So that was my 1K, and it was brilliant and terrifying, and it has inspired me. I was surrounded by all these people running quite fast 5Ks. I was like, what could I do next? And so that is a challenge to the Running Channel community, which is email into podcast@therunningchannel.com with what I should do next. I think if I had full reign over my life and destiny, which it seems I don't have anymore,
nope.
then it would be a 5K.
Which is weird considering he's the CEO.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, I'm at the whims of everybody else. So yeah, I'd like to run a fast 5K, and I have it in my mind what I could do.
You've got it in your mind.
Yeah, yeah. I want to be ambitious with everything that I achieve.
Well, obviously you held the world record for 13 years, was it?
11 years of the park.
Sorry, I went under last time and I've gone over this time. Yeah, I said 8 last time.
And what was that? 11. That was 13:48.
13:48, yeah. So I'm not going to get near that.
We're not getting near that one.
I haven't gone under 16 minutes in years and years.
Is that a,
okay.
But I'd like to this year.
I'd like to go well under that.
Really? So
I think and that's the thing. If I decide to do my next challenge, I want to do it properly. So I've got a target for the marathon that I want to do at the end of the year.
Yeah.
Maybe a half in the middle. And then a 5K is what I'd like to do next.
Do we know what marathon you're doing?
Andy the runner is so, can we just flashback to this?
This is back. He's back.
Like this time last year. There wasn't this drive. There wasn't this confidence. There wasn't this excitement.
We had to persuade him.
Welcome
to do
back, yeah. Andy Baddeley, the runner.
I know. What marathon are you doing, by the way?
I think it's likely to be Malaga. So we've got some exciting news coming.
I love Spain.
We're just sitting on it a little bit because we haven't confirmed everything.
Pedro and Peppers.
If anyone's listening and fancies either a half marathon, oh my God, I'm trying to plow on. And he's just talking about food.
Good night's out as well.
I don't think we should take the most useful contribution. I love Spain.
Yeah.
If you're listening from Spain, we love you.
Yeah.
I feel like great food.
Yeah, there we go. Food and wine.
So good. Rioja. But White Rioja.
I'm hoping that we'll have something exciting to announce soon where I'm going to plow on here.
Sorry, Mr. Badley.
I've missed you two.
I think he was talking about Spain.
Come on.
We might have something exciting for you at the end of the year to do with Spain and Andy running a marathon. Look, stay tuned. There you go.
It's more than that. I would like people to come with us. Run. There's a half marathon and marathon at the Malaga Marathon Weekend in Spain in December. We're planning on hopefully taking a kind of host of the Running Channel community with us.
Really? That's big.
But we're just trying to put together what that looks like. So watch this space. And if you think you might be interested in doing that, coming and experiencing the weekend with us, with or without Rick, if I'm honest, like you let us know whether he adds any value to that experience at all. And we will let you speak. So me and Sarah will definitely be there.
Someone's got to marshal events and do the socializing.
Yeah,
end of the day, events. Someone's got to marshal what happens in the weekend.
You have to roll out of your hotel room that just happens to be next to the course.
Yeah.
Just as Andy's just gone past.
I was going to say, if anyone gets to be supported.
Done. When you guys are running, I get stuff done.
If anyone wants to be supported in their marathon at the points which are geographically convenient for Rick and don't impact on his wake-up time.
Oh my gosh, we digress. Anyway, look forward to that. Yeah. Well done on your kilometre time. Yeah.
I am pumped for taking on some ambitious challenges this year. The times are now what motivates me, and just to see what I can do and how much better I can get with consistent training. So watch this space.
Ooh, and this is the Running Channel podcast. Up next, we've got some incredible questions to answer from you. But first, let's talk about the news. Don't forget, this episode is sponsored by Under Armour and their Infinite Elite shoes. Now, at the Running Channel, we bang on all the time about how if you want to run fast, you need to run slow. I'm talking about the 80-20 rule.
Yes, you need to do the vast majority of your training at an easier or steadier pace. And you need an everyday pair of running shoes that you trust to do that. And the Infinite Elite has brand new cushioning technology in the form of Under Armour's Hover Plus. So that's designed to support you for the whole of even your longest runs with extra cushioning and energy return. So that's what this is all about.
Yeah, and if you want to check out the Under Armour Infinite Elite, head to the link in the show notes.
this week's news is pretty amazing.
It is absolutely phenomenal. And that is talking about the Barclay Marathons. Now, there are a lot of finishers this year at Barclay.
Which is really unusual because there's only been now, 20? Is it 20 finishers ever?
Yeah, I think so. Something like that.
And there were three first-time finishers this year.
Yeah. So I think, from memory, I think we talked about the Barclay Marathons last year on the podcast, but that was a whole year ago. So if you're not sure what they are, essentially it is one of the toughest races on the planet and also one of the most bonkers races on the planet. So there's no official start time. You start within, I think, a 24-hour period or a 12-hour period, and you just have to wait for a cigarette to be lit, I think it is.
Yeah, I think there's a warning before that, isn't there?
Yeah.
There's
like a little warning, but you just have to be ready to go, which is already going to mess up your sleep.
And then when Lazarus Lake, who devised it, when he lights his cigarette, then the race is off.
Yeah, you go off in loops, and essentially you have to, it's all navigation based and it's map and compass. You're not allowed GPS running watches and there's no kind of official
map
course
and
route.
Compass.
Yeah, like no one knows what this route actually is. So you go off and you do loops and you have to collect pages from a book which prove you've gone to all of the points on the course. So you can't go the wrong way, basically.
Yeah, and it's but your
movement could change. So it's 100 kilometres. Is it 100 kilometres or 100 miles?
100 miles.
It's 100 miles.
Well, they reckon it's more. It's
but
five,
it's more because
five,
you go off.
They say each lap is each loop is about 20 miles.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And it's different course every year.
And just to make it that little bit harder, if there is more than one, this is how like little people complete it. If there is more than one person going out on loop five, so that you can't do it together, you get sent out in opposite directions. So I think this year,
oh my gosh,
multiple people started.
There were seven people, I think, started
the
final
started
loop, which
loop
is unheard
five.
Of.
Yeah. But then also Damien Hall, who was absolutely gutted for him. He didn't complete loop five, but he realized that he wasn't going to make it back in time. So instead he just kind of recce'd the end of it, which just shows like how brutal this course is. The fact that
he recce'd it. So is it the same in future years then?
I don't know. I'm not sure, but that's kind of what he said. He
recce'd the area.
So maybe
it
does.
Yeah.
I mean, it's definitely always in the same area, isn't it?
There's definitely
And it was, and it started because there was a story about someone escaping from a prison in that area, and over the course of 60 hours, or which is the cutoff time for the Barclay Marathons, that person had only managed to actually cover about 5 miles or 10 miles as the crow flies because it was so difficult to navigate.
Oh, I see.
So that's
the terrain was so difficult to
cross. That's where it came from. And they have loads of crazy stuff. Like if you get only 35 people get accepted every year to do it, you get a letter of condolence, which is your acceptance letter saying that you're going to be running.
So good.
And then if you manage to complete three of the five laps, which is pretty incredible in itself, that's called a fun run.
Oh my God.
I think Jasmine Paris completed in 2022.
Yeah. So Jasmine Paris, this was her third attempt at this race.
Yeah.
And she's done it. And she is the first woman ever to complete the Barclay Marathons. And it is just, you might never heard of it, but you might have seen this story across loads of really major news outlets and not just sports news outlets either. And I think this just goes to show like how much of an impact it is to see a woman complete a race like this, because it's so inspiring. And I love the fact as well that it's not a kind of like one and done. It's the perseverance and the fact that she went out and did it. And she also did it with 99 seconds to spare.
Yeah. All of the people that started the final loop. So she actually came in fifth, I think, fifth runner overall.
Mm-hmm.
And the last one just before the cutoff.
Mm. Yeah.
But I think they all took over 14 hours to do lap four.
Yeah.
And then I think they only had less than that, 13 and a half hours-ish to do the final lap. So they all had to kind of pick up the pace, having been doing this for 40 hours, 50 hours.
It's just madness.
And the incredible thing as well is that you don't really have that knowledge of like how long is left when you're out there. So I think as well, we've got some footage which we put on our social channel of like her running in. And I'm pretty sure at that point, like she didn't actually know how much time was left. So it is that like real...
She knew it was close.
Yeah, she knew it was close, but she didn't know exactly. So it's that real adrenaline of just like keep going, try and get there.
Yeah, we should get her on.
We're going to try for sure, because I think she'd be amazing to speak to. And just for extra background, and the reason that it is so, and she's exciting, is that a few years ago, she kind of rose to prominence by winning the spine race in the UK, but winning it outright.
Mm.
So not just she wasn't the female winner, she was the winner of the race. And she was, I think, 15 hours ahead of the next person. That was phenomenal on its own. But then it was very soon after she'd had her, I think, first child. And it turned out that at aid stations throughout that race, which is 260 miles or something, she had been expressing breast milk for her child.
Yeah.
At the aid stations.
That's amazing.
It's absolutely phenomenal.
Do you know what? And I think she said in some of the interviews as well that it was amazing to prove what can be done once you've had small children as well.
Yeah.
So, or children, because generally children are small when they start out.
Well, oh, that's the incredible insight from Rick. From Rick.
There's someone who has a couple.
It's time for your questions.
I feel like we get a lot of questions from Australia. Is that just me?
We do. Well, we get them all over the world.
A lot international.
I think if we were going to go on tour internationally, we should go to Australia.
Oh, I think so.
Okay.
Although I want to be on a separate flight or at least a separate seat from Rick.
Why?
Well, you can't face 20 hours on a flight with Rick.
Can you imagine?
Absolutely not. Well, he'll have his eye mask on and he'll have already ploughed through 5 bottles of Gavi.
I've got a new eye mask, actually. It's amazing. Now it's getting a bit lighter in the morning. Anyway, Rebecca Barter from County Victoria. Uh-huh. Do marathoners really pee themselves to save time during a race? And also, when do you honestly think that hydration vests are actually needed?
So right, both sides of hydration here.
Both of you, do you know where the hydration vest debate is coming from?
No.
No.
TikTok.
Oh, that's why we don't know.
Right. So there is a huge debate on TikTok at the moment. It might be elsewhere. I don't know. I'm not fully up to date. Of people going out for maybe like 5K, 10K runs wearing a hydration vest.
Okay.
It's becoming a big thing. And there's a whole debate of people who are from like doing longer distance being like, you don't need a hydration vest for a 5K run. However, as a lot of people have combated it with, if you need to carry stuff, wear it whenever you like.
I see. So yeah, you're not using it to hydrate. You're using it to carry your keys.
Yeah.
Because you haven't got a
pair of shorts. Example, I saw Philly Bowden went to go pick up some alcohol-free beers and took a hydration vest on a 10K to load up the back of her vest.
You can't run back with beers that are so heavy.
I don't know how successful that was.
I mean, I'm about to say something and then contradict myself. I was going to say, like, you do what you want.
Yeah.
Like, but unless it's...
But there's guidance. There's guidance, because do what you want is never useful guidance.
No, but like if
from
it's...
as in you should never do what you want.
Exactly. If we just say to everyone, do what you want, then we're
what I meant is there's no judgment. So whatever you...
There you go.
Yeah. Unless you're doing sock shoe, sock shoe. And then there's judgment.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
I'm still hammering on about
really,
this.
Really sound advice.
Yeah.
coming from Andy.
No, I don't... if you're talking about it from the purest sense of like, do you need to hydrate on certain distances, then I'd say on a 5K and a 10K, then no, you don't need a hydration vest. For the pure purposes of hydration, it's not. Yeah.
No.
Not
but required. Then I would argue that is like a 5K or a 10K in the UK. Like true. We went to go watch 5,000 meter race at the World Champs in Budapest last year, and they had a water aid station out for that because it was so hot.
Yeah, it's obviously weather dependent. And I did a 10K race in Manchester a few years ago,
nice.
And it was beautifully sunny. And I would never have considered taking water during a 10K, but I did take a water after about 6 or 7K because I was parched.
Yeah, see, whereas I did a 10K a few weeks ago now where they didn't have water stations and it wasn't that hot, but I was like, oh, I could use some water.
I would say though, if you are doing a shorter distance and you are going to carry a hydration vest, then I would minimize the weight that you're carrying.
Yeah.
But don't take too much. You don't need to take like 2 liters of water with you for a 10K. Take a little bit to sip on and then make sure you get hydrated afterwards. Also, you might want to be building up to a longer distance and therefore you're getting used to wearing the vest, which is different.
That is useful advice.
But I like the first bit of the question. I'm thinking this is more interesting. Oh, do marathoners really pee themselves?
On this.
I'm just thinking about something we can't say.
So on this one, no. Because it's too hard. I've tried.
Yeah, I've tried as well. I was worried about this for Valencia.
There's no way I could do it. Sorry, go on.
I was thinking that for Valencia Marathon, I didn't want to lose a minute or 2 minutes to go into a port-a-loo.
Yeah.
And on every single run that I did need a wee. And I was like, this is going to ruin my potential time.
Yeah.
So
did you try to pee yourself in the race?
Yeah. No. I tried to pee myself on a run and I couldn't do it.
Right. Yeah, no, I was the same. Berlin Marathon, needed a wee the whole way round to the point where I was like, right, I'm just going to do it. I'm just going to accept it. I'm in dark coloured shorts. It'll be fine. Yeah. Can do it.
You're good. Yeah. I'll
tell you when you can do it though.
People talk about it though. So
have you ever run really, really hard and then you get to the end of like a hard effort and then your body is just suddenly like,
no.
You've done that, have you?
Yeah, done that. Just me.
Did you describe that as clearing yourself out as well?
Oh God, Andy, that is just too.
I mean, that's what she said on the podcast recently. It was awful.
Haunted me. Oh, I didn't sleep that night. Yeah. I didn't sleep that night, even with my new eye mask on.
Lovely stuff. But there you go.
Yeah, we've got another one though.
Great.
His name's Jorgen from Belgium, and he says, "I started running 2 years ago and love it." And his seven-year-old son has joined him in track and field at a club recently, but he can't shake the idea of racing on the track and doing cross country. So I think he wants to start racing on the track. He says he's 31 years old and he's not that fast in comparison to the guys who've done it since they were kids. The distance that he wants to try is 1500 meters or 800 meters, but he kind of wonders if it's too late for him to start out going on the track and taking on that challenge. He's fast though. He says his 5K PB time is 23:38.
It is never too late. Like, go out, obviously train, stretch. Yeah. Because when I was out in Jamaica, there were a few people who did not stretch and then tried to do a track workout and then were very sore the next day. But no, it's never too late. Do it. Go for it.
Yeah, I think you just need to do special training. And like Sarah says, the faster you go, the more important the warm-up and kind of flexibility and stuff's going to be. So make sure you get those dynamic movements in, do some fast strides before you attempt faster workouts.
Yeah.
But look at specific workouts for 1500 and 800 meters. So the simple ones are go on the track to get a feel for it in the first place and doing 400 meter one lap efforts with short recovery. And if you're training for the 1500, then you probably need to be doing between 6 and 10 of those. That's the simplest session that you can do for this kind of work.
Say that again.
So let's call it 8. 8 Rick times 400 meters with 1 minute to 90 seconds recovery.
Okay.
And whatever pace you can run for, say, let's say 6 to 8 of those is probably the pace that you could hold for 1500 meters.
Oh, okay.
Because you're doing over distance, yeah, but you've got the recoveries added in there. So I'd love to know how Jorgen gets on, actually. So
yeah, let us obviously know.
This is like something I'd be passionate about. At 31 is nothing.
I know, it's absolutely nothing. Now, that was great fun.
That was great fun. Why do you sound so serious?
I've missed you a lot. No, because it's the time of the day.
Uh-huh. When Rick stops us talking.
when I stop you talking, but also when Sarah asks a favour.
So I don't want to ask a favour this week.
Oh, really?
I want to give you a little update in that you need to keep your eyes peeled on, and you do as well, on our social channels, because I have made it my mission in life to find out whether people are sock, sock, shoe, shoe, they're sock, shoe, sock, shoe.
How is this still going on?
So far, I have asked some very high-level athletes. I've asked the CEO of Puma.
Oh, really?
Who luckily wasn't a psychopath, according to Andy.
One of his team was.
One of his team was. He wasn't too happy about that.
What's the CEO of Puma like?
Really nice. Is it? Like, so nice. And most importantly, sock, sock, shoe, shoe. So he's good. Yeah. He's good. But I want to know, are you sock, sock, shoe, shoe, or are you sock, shoe, sock, shoe? Well, maybe we'll put out a little poll so we can do it. But if not, email in podcast@therunningchannel.com. Are you a psychopath?
It's got to be 90% plus.
It has to be.
Do you think?
I think
the more people who answer, the more likely it is to be 50-50. Think about it. In hot countries, people are less bothered about having a bare foot. But a big debate that we were talking about when I was asking people out in Jamaica is like, what happens if you have a sock and a shoe on and then you need to run away? Your other foot.
That's a good point.
You're just barefoot.
I think we should think of some cool polls as well. Maybe we should poll people with what wrist they wear their watch on. That's something I think is interesting.
I mean, that's just that.
Anyway,
there we go.
It's time to go. Excited. I'll see you all next week when we're going to talk about hills.
Ooh, see you then.
This episode was brought to you by Under Armour and their Infinite Elite everyday running shoe, which has a focus on both comfort and endurance. So an ultra springy, responsive feel that protects your legs and keeps them feeling fresh, which is what Jess has been putting to the test as she's been training for over the last 12 weeks for taking on her ultimate ever 10K. And she's been focused on consistency. So being able to show up with those fresh legs every day and every week in order to put in the work and the recovery that she needs to do to run her best.
If you want to check out the Under Armour Infinite Elite, head to the link in the show notes.